This month, as we are continuing and finishing up our worship theme, A Community of Embrace, it has meant so much to me to see the pictures that many of you have sent in, arms outstretched, ready to offer a hug. Me, I'm a hugger. As I mentioned in the Wonder Box time with Allie, I realize not everyone is, and I strive to ask permission before hugging, but I just love offering and receiving hugs, and it is a perk of ministry that it is usually part of my job description. And this will come as no surprise to anyone who knows me even a little bit, but I am also an extrovert. That doesn't mean, as some people assume, that I'm gregarious and outgoing, although sometimes that is the case. Extroversion and introversion refers to how you get your energy. As an extrovert, I get my energy from being around people, whereas introverts need alone time to recharge. The energy exchange that happens during Sunday mornings in the service, in the hallways, with the kids running around, in coffee hour, I would leave each week feeling simultaneously physically tired, but emotionally and spiritually energized. Those moments of embrace were entirely thrown out last March, when the pandemic descended upon us, and in order to stay physically safe, we needed to stay physically separate. As an extrovert, my recharge opportunities of being around people disappeared. Now, I am very thankful for the possibilities granted to us by Zoom, YouTube, Facebook, email, and all the other online ways that we are staying connected, but it is so not the same. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy the 10-second commute and the fact that I usually get to wear slippers when I'm preaching, but I would put on real shoes in a minute if it meant that I could give you a hug. Right now, as we stand on a precipice, our geographic area being among the very worst hotspots for COVID outbreak in our country, with national and local elections only a couple days away, the results looming far or near in the future, we don't know, with ongoing political and civil unrest and uprising, all of this, just as the air outside is getting colder, outdoor gatherings are becoming less and less possible, we are all in need of embrace. And this is why we exist. This is why we here at the Fellowship and religious communities in general exist. We exist to provide a loving embrace, especially for those who need it the most. Recently at our governing board meeting, we were discussing the desire that we all have to come to the fellowship to be comforted, and yet how it is such an important part of our theological tradition not to just sit back and passively receive the comfort, but to provide healing and justice to the world through our actions. One of the things that came up at that board meeting was the idea, which is often attributed to theologian Martin Marty, that God afflicts the comfortable and comforts the afflicted, and therefore religious traditions ought to as well. It is our job to urge those of us with comfort to move toward loving action, even if it makes us uncomfortable. And then, as we say in the South, to love on those who need comfort. Now, finding where we are on that spectrum of comfortable versus afflicted, and of course, on our place on that spectrum is going to change, that finding that place on the spectrum can be a challenge, particularly if it changes day to day or moment to moment, and it does. Many of us are bursting with blessings in this life. Things to be grateful for, privileges we possess, and even those of us with blessings, privileges, we are struggling, especially right now. We are grieving lost loved ones and having to do so from a distance. We are grieving missed opportunities. We are stressed about the day-to-day decision-making and the systems that are failing all of us. But some among us are, as is sometimes said, at the margins, already pushed aside in a world that centers power and privilege. And the pandemic and the political unrest have made those margins even more vulnerable. As I've been thinking about this concept of embrace, I was recently made aware of a concept that the Lutheran pastor Nadia Boltz-Weber wrote about in her book, Shameless. She also shared it in a recent blog post entitled Corners. Here's what she wrote. When looking out the window of an airplane at the geometry of industrial agriculture below me, I'd wonder, like a dumbass city girl, why in the world do farmers plant circles of crops in lots that are square? Well, after a little research, I discovered that in 1940, just 29 miles from my apartment, a man named Frank Zybach invented the center pivot irrigation system, essentially revolutionizing farming in America. In his system, the watering equipment turns on a pivot, allowing sprinklers to water the crops in a circular pattern. It ends up, the crops aren't planted in circles, they're just watered that way. The water never gets to the crops in the corners. God, Nadia Boltz-Weber writes, planted so many of us in the corners. And yet, she says, the center pivot teachings of the church never seem to make their way to us. She continues at the end of her blog post, quote, "It may feel as though some of us have been relegated to the corners, but here's the thing. From the corners, I can see the whole room. I love the corners. I always have. It is where I will always choose to sit because I love outcasts. Queers, the girls who talk too loud. I love humor that comes out of lives that have not been easy. I love drunks, single dads, sex workers, and the guy who lost a leg in the war. These are my people. So here's what I hope," she writes, "that what is shared here is water, God willing, for those planted in the corners." End quote. And this is my hope too. As Unitarian Universalists, we are uniquely positioned to be a truly, authentically welcoming faith. We open our arms to people of many paths in life without concern for creed or doctrine. We hold the doors wide open for people who have historically been excluded from traditional faiths. But in some ways, we continue to fall short of our goal and our potential. We, as UUs, sometimes have a tendency to get stuck. We get stuck in partisanship. We get stuck in classism. And we focus sometimes on irrelevant battles. Nancy McDonald Ladd, minister in the Washington, D.C. area, calls them fake fights. These irrelevant battles are about terminology or particular expressions of theology. Do we use God language or not? This hymn or that hymn? Robert's Rules of Order! And we forget that our focus is embrace. Our focus, our purpose, is to provide the embrace that each of us needs at some time or another, and definitely right now, and to focus on embracing those who Boltz Weber says are planted in the corners. What a beautiful focus. Embrace. So much more meaningful and fun than all that other stuff, right? Now, as a minister, I get to be a close observer of people. And I have learned one very important thing about human nature, that we are full of contradictions. I absolutely know for sure that I need to eat healthy food when I'm feeling stress. But time and time again, I find myself in the kitchen with a bowl of Fruit Loops as a sugar-laden coping mechanism. I love Fruit Loops. We need the fellowship and we need our spiritual practices the most in times of crisis. And yet it is one of the easiest things to let go when all the other demands of life impede upon our time and our energy. Trust me, you will receive no guilt, none, zero, from me or from any of us here at the fellowship if you can't make it regularly to services, or if you haven't logged your kid onto RE yet. No guilt. We get it. And yet we know that what we are offering here by the staff and the lay leaders is providing that sustenance and embrace that we know that people really need right now. So we hope that you will take advantage of it in whatever way you are able. Logging on to YouTube and watching the service as you fold laundry after your kids are in bed is a totally valid way for you to connect to your fellowship right now. No guilt. Do what you need to do. But know that we are here and we love you and embrace you all the same. Another contradiction in human nature is that we tend to love to offer support to one another, but we are afraid to ask if it is specifically needed, and we are even more afraid to ask when we are in need. I've done it, and I see this over and over again at the fellowship as your minister. People poured in generous support for our minister's discretionary fund at the beginning of the pandemic. We now have more funds than we have ever had in the past to offer to people who are in need. And yet, people rarely take us up on the offer when we offer it. I appreciate the power of pride and dignity, not wanting to take a handout. But on the other hand, the offer is there. We have extended it. The system doesn't work if everybody wants to cook a casserole, but nobody is willing to eat one. Embrace is a two-way street. Both people have to open their arms. Both people have to be willing to offer and accept the embrace. Allie spoke about vulnerability in her reflection, and I think that vulnerability is some of what is behind this human contradiction. Not wanting to be wrong or weak or whatever it is that is holding us back from the yes of true embrace. I love the positive spin that Reverend Sean Parker Dennison shared in the poem we heard earlier. To invoke love, Parker Dennison writes, to invoke love is to approach each day and every person with wonder, anticipating love's arrival. Is this the moment? Is this love's grand entrance? Is this person the embodiment of love? Am I the one? This, to me, flips the whole concept of vulnerability on its head and gives excitement and anticipation to each embrace. Is this offer of a casserole or this card in the mail or this check for $300? Is this love's grand entrance? Is this person who is providing chairs and water bottles at the polls the embodiment of love? Is my effort to support Black-led organizations emerging out of my own commitment to love? Is this how we will give and receive embrace in these times? And yet, Parker Dennison also reminds us to invoke love is to take the risk of inviting chaos to visit the space that you spent so much time making tidy, and watch as the breath of life scatters everything you have only just folded and put away. To offer and receive embrace is not a guaranteed success, which returns us to Allie's point about vulnerability. There is risk inherent in embrace. And yet this is the risk of living fully, of embracing each other and reaching into the corners to offer embrace beyond the circle. We might mess up. We might get it wrong. We can feel certain that we will not do any of this perfectly. It will not be tidy. It might be chaotic. But when I look back at that picture from the Wonder Box of me and Leah hugging up here, with so many of you looking on from the congregation, it was a risk. It was a risk for you to call me as your minister. It was a risk for Leah and I to agree to be on a ministry team together. We might have not been a good fit at all, but it turns out we work really well together. It was a risk for each of us to commit to this faith, which asks a lot of us, even in hard times. That moment of embrace, and so many of the ones that have come after, wow. We know when it feels right. I'm so glad we took this risk together. I hope we can continue to take them. I hope even as the world continues to be hard and scary and filled to the brim with anxiety for all of us, and especially those who live where the water doesn't easily reach, I hope we will embrace each other again and again and again, in all the ways that we as a faith community do best, through our love and connection and support and commitment. May you open your arms, exposing your vulnerable heart, invoking love to be love for someone else. May you feel the embrace and lean yourself gently into it. May we embrace each other even now, from a distance. May it be so, and amen.